Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, July 11th, 2014. The government accuses rebels of attacks in Upper Nile and Unity States.
The attacks in Unity State are repulsed, and the SPLA is still committing to the ceasefire.
And the EU follows through on its promise to sanction two military leaders. But the government claims the EU's information is flawed.
They are even trying to punish wrong people. The government has been always committed to peace agreement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan military says rebels led by former Vice President Riek Machar attacked government positions in Unity and Upper Nile states this morning. But a rebel spokesman claims it was government forces that attacked rebel positions first. For VOA News, Philip Aleo reports from Juba.
SPLA spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguirre says government forces came under attack in Wankai and Gwet in Unity State early today. He says the government army defended their positions.
The attacks in Unity State are repulsed, and the SPLA is still committing to the ceasefire. We are also monitoring a move by forces of Riek Machar in a plan to attack Ayud, and they are coming closer to Ayud. And the forces of the SPLA, mandated by the Constitution, remain the National Army that is protecting the civilians, protecting the territorial integrity of the Republic of South Sudan.
Opposition military spokesperson Lurwai Kwang denies the accusation and says it was government forces that attacked the rebel bases in Unity and Upper Nile states.
The day before yesterday and yesterday, the government troops moved out of Nasa town, went to two villages. One village is called Weitut, another village is called Dording. They burnt down some parts of those two villages, and they were repulsed. They went back to Nasa town. Today in the morning, some government troops, actually, two locations in Unity State. Went to Good County, east of Antio Town. They left their vehicles on the main road, went on foot to the nearby villages, and started attacking our positions. They did the same in a place called Tarquil, that's in Mayom County. And the government is entirely responsible for those attacks. They launched and provoked attacks on our positions.
Both sides continue to blame each other for attacks in violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement signed 2 months ago. Again, Colonel Aguirre.
We are monitoring movement of armed militia or forces that are crossing from the Republic of Sudan, joining forces of Riek Machar in Unity State and Upper Nile, but SPLA will continue to monitoring them. We will never move out of our bases, but we'll teach them lessons while they continue to attack SPLA.
The original ceasefire signed in January by two parties was quickly broken. The one signed again in May between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar has largely failed to end the fighting in Upper Nile, Unity, and Jonglei states. For VOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
As expected today, the European Union named two South Sudanese military leaders it is sanctioning for obstructing peace in the country. One of them is Peter Gadet, the leader of a rebel militia that led an attack on the town of Bentiu in April, in which more than 200 civilians were killed. Some were killed while they were sheltering in places of worship and hospitals. The EU accuses Gadet of fueling violence in South Sudan, obstructing the political process, and of serious human rights violations. The United States imposed sanctions on Gadet in May. The other official who is being sanctioned is Santino Deng, commander of the SPLA's 3rd Infantry Division. The EU says Deng violated the January ceasefire agreement when he took part in the recapture of Bentiu from opposition forces in May. Both men are barred from traveling to the European Union, and any assets they have in the EU have been frozen. The sanctions are valid for 1 year. South Sudan presidential spokesman Atteni Wekatenni says the government was surprised that Santino was included in those sanctions. Atteni spoke with South Sudan in Focus in Juba today.
There's no any commander in the government that obstruct peace because they fall under one command. General Salva Kiir Mayardit is the one who instruct them. So they have all stopped. Since the president signed the agreement on the on the 9th of May. So they have not been going out. Even the cessation of hostilities that was signed on 23rd of January, they respected it. Only that they can defend themselves when they are attacked.
Atani says the EU appears to be favoring rebel groups.
They are even trying to punish wrong people. The government has been always committed to peace agreement. It is the rebels who are actually looking to themselves as a spoiled child of the international community are the one, you know, who just do anything. So they will get away. The rebel will get away with whatever they does because the international community is not looking at them.
South Sudan in Focus reached out to the rebels but did not get a comment. The EU Chief of Diplomacy for Africa, Nick Westcott, said the European Union imposed the sanctions because the humanitarian situation in South Sudan is dire and, quote, we could not wait any longer, unquote. More than 10,000 people have died and more than 1.5 million people have been displaced in the fighting that broke out in December between different factions of the ruling SPLM party. Talks to try to restore the peace talks broke off last month. The EU says it will impose more sanctions on other officials if the two sides in the 7-month-long conflict do not return to the negotiating table soon and make a real effort to reach and stick to a peace agreement. Leading politicians around the country have staked out positions in favor of or opposing federalism. In Western Equatoria State, there is strong support for a federal system. People there believe federalism will solve many of the nation's problems. In Yambio, Gift Friday takes a closer look at federalism and what it could mean for South Sudan, and he has filed this report for VOA.
In churches, family gatherings, and on television and radio, federalism has become a prime topic of discussion in Western Equatoria State. The state's Minister of Physical Infrastructure, Clement Juma Mbogonwia, says from the beginning in 1947, Western Equatoria State has supported federalism. Juma says Sudan has demanded a federal system of government from the Sudanese Arabs who rejected it because they wanted to control resources and power. Juma, who also chairs the United South Sudan Party, says 80% of the national budget is retained in the center, which means the bulk of the nation's resources are controlled by the national government. And yet, the government still has yet to provide basic services to its citizens. He says the states can do a better job.
We are calling for a federal system so that simply power become closer. So that will enable the state to be more powerful in terms of resources, so that they can be able to address the need of their citizens. That has been centralized, and there is a clear distinction of power between what the national government should do and what the state should do.
The chairperson of Western Equatoria State Youth Union, Simple John Bakiki, says 100% of the state's youth support federalism.
And I think the advantage is more than the disadvantage. And the advantage is that to bring government close to people, and states will take large budget, and you know, we shall have good roads to our people, services will come near, and we shall have a small system at the central government.
He says some states are opposing federal system because they lack manpower. Grace William Bakata is a member of an Adesa women support group who also wants a federal system of government.
Federalism will minimize corruption, better deliverance of social services in the country, example like opportunity for employment, promote good governance.
The Kiir administration denies it is preventing the media from publishing or airing stories about the subject, but newspaper editors recently said they were instructed not to run any stories about federalism by a federal official. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Yambio.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Spoiled or contaminated food poses a serious health hazard, particularly for children and the elderly. The World Health Organization reports that thousands of Africans die every day from food-related diseases. Experts suggest these steps to help protect you and your family. Before preparing food, it's very important to wash your hands. This can prevent most cases of food poisoning. Only cook with fresh meat and fish. To avoid the spread of harmful bacteria, never prepare raw meat or fish on the same board or surface used to prepare vegetables or grain. Make sure meat, fish, and eggs are cooked thoroughly. Store leftover foods in covered containers in a cool location out of the sun. Do not consume food that smells rotten or contains mold or other impurities.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a humanitarian campaign is underway to help the thousands of Sudanese hard hit by flash floods and torrential rains. That story when we come back.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on the events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That is South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it's okay for children to argue with their parents?
Not arguing in a bad way. Okay, I think it's okay. It's okay, but not in a bad way. They should argue in a good way so that, as in, they can be able to speak out. You know, sometimes some parents are just too much on their children. So yeah, I think it's okay.
It's not okay because the children need to respect their parents. It shouldn't be an argument, it should be an engagement. If they have a different view of how they see things, they should have a different forum or a different way to address that, but not to argue with their parents.
Your parent is in the wrong side. You have a right to tell mom, dad, this is not right. So I think they have a right to argue. They have a right to express their views to their parents.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. I'm Gwen Uten. It's time for your comments. This week, we heard from many of you about the meaning of federalism and Independence Day. Juma Mangok, a teacher at Gracia Nursery and Primary School in Yambio, says, "Federalism means different things to different South Sudanese citizens." Juma goes on, "When will we stop looking at ourselves on a tribal basis? God spoke to us through the scriptures in the Bible that he will not allow human beings to rule themselves under the influence of Satan. Shall we allow our young nation to be used by the devil?" Robert Samuel from Yambio, Western Equatoria State, has a different point of view. He writes, "There is no freedom of expression in South Sudan because talking about federalism has become an insult to some people and is even a cause of death nowadays." He continues, "While some people say federalism is good, others are saying it will divide the country's citizens. I am urging the international community to explain to us what federalism means." He concludes, "We were not born to die in war, fighting among ourselves." Duboy Manasse in Yambio, Western Equatoria State, asks, "What is a federal system of governance? It seems like a strange system to most of us today. We, the citizens, need a clear explanation of the meaning of federalism from our leaders so that we understand. Common villagers have picked on federalism as good governance, in which every state will have its own administrative division, in which no other tribes will have a chance either to work or live in. But," he says, "I think that's not the meaning of federalism, because we are South Sudanese brothers and sisters. We need each other." Dario Donato in Inzara County, Western Equatoria State, writes simply, "Let us have peace first. Then we can talk about whether or not to adopt federalism as a system of governance." Akin Yanyut in Juba is focused on the nation's independence. He says, "As we celebrate our third independence anniversary this week, I urge all of us to live in peace and harmony as members of a diverse and great nation so that this senseless war waged on us by Riek Machar and his group will come to an end. That's the only way we shall achieve peace once more in our great nation." Cole Philip Quare, also in Juba, writes,
This week, we are all excited and full of joy during the celebration of our third independence anniversary. We believe that South Sudan's independence is not reversible. This is because our heroes and heroines cemented the foundation of our nation, and we cemented it further when we voted for separation during the independence referendum 3 years ago. And finally, Carlo Athian Ayuwang, also in Juba, writes, Rebecca Nyandang is always talking of corruption, lack of service delivery, and lack of development. But she was a minister of roads and transportation from 2005 to 2010. He asked Nyandang, during your time as a minister, what did you achieve? Which roads did you construct? Ayuwang tells Nyandang, don't pretend to be good because you were also among the corrupt leaders. Thanks for your comments. We want to hear your thoughts. You can reach us by text or on the web at southsudan@voanews.com. I'm Gwen Uten.
And we read listener comments on Fridays. These comments come from you, our listeners, and they reflect the views of the commentator only. The comments do not represent the views of anyone on this program or The Voice of America. A medical charity says it's offering free emergency clinical and surgical services to more than 1,200 people injured during the 7 months of political violence in South Sudan. The African Medical Research Foundation, or AMREF, says more than half of their patients are women. As Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, AMREF says it will also train local medical staff on how to manage surgical cases.
Dr. George Boka, AMREF's country director for South Sudan, says his organization conducted a baseline survey in South Sudan after the fighting erupted in December. Dr. Boka says they found more than 3,000 people were wounded either on the front lines or caught up in the crossfire during clashes between government and rebel forces. Dr. Boka says either there is a complete lack of hospitals and medical facilities in the more densely populated areas affected by the fighting, or the existing facilities do not have the capability to provide surgical and primary health care services.
The specific interventions that this project will focus on will be assessing the hospitals we're going to work in, to establish what gaps exist, mobilizing resources, both material, equipment, and human resources, to be able to respond to the needs, felt and expressed needs in the communities.
Boka says AMREF will treat gunshot wounds and other serious injuries caused by the fighting in several areas across the country.
This project will target the following hospitals: Juba Teaching Hospital, which is the National Referral Hospital, WOW Teaching Hospital in the Greater Bagazal, Bor Hospital in Jonglei State, and with access to humanitarian space, we'll be able to extend our services to Malakal in Upper Nile, as well as Bentiu in Unity State. We're also reaching Warap State by working in Kwajok Hospital.
Boka says children and pregnant women displaced by the fighting remain vulnerable to preventable communicable diseases due to poor sanitation, a critical shortage of water, and overcrowded camps. He says AMREF is trying to increase maternal, child health and nutrition services to thousands of women and children affected by the conflict. Janet Michael, a director in South Sudan's health ministry, says children will particularly benefit from the medical outreach program.
We know that more children are now orphans. They have lost both parents. Some are living in those camps in a really dire conditions. To increase access and utilization of maternal and child health, of course, and nutrition, I think this is well needed. To enhance capacity of county health department, building system is also very important.
AMREF officials say they expect to treat about 500 children, most of whom are suffering from malnutrition. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In Sudan, recent heavy rains and flash floods have affected some 740,000 displaced people. One of the big concerns has been the spread of diseases linked to waste and garbage. To combat the problem, the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, has been conducting a campaign of life-saving services that they call Wash, Water, Sanitation, and Hygiene, in partnership with the World Health Organization and UNICEF. Dr. Aziza El-Maki, the emergency health specialist for IOM in Sudan, tells VOA's Kim Lewis that they're delivering basic services to those places hardest hit by flooding, Khartoum and Darfur.
The WASH campaign had started on October and it continued for like 5 to 6 months. The WASH campaign was in response to the flash floods and the heavy rains experienced in 14 states across Sudan. The project was based on a rapid response fund through UN Central Emergency Reserve Fund, SERF, in partnership with UNICEF and WHO.
What exactly have you all been doing to promote personal and environmental hygiene and waste management?
Actually, it has been meant to provide basic water sanitation and hygiene life-saving services for people affected and displaced by the floods in the most vulnerable states across Sudan. This was primarily in Khartoum, which is the capital of Sudan, West Darfur, and South Darfur. It was a rapid response that meant to reinforce and boost the most limited capacity of the partners to conduct preventive intervention of disease outbreak in the aftermath of these floods. So IOM role was basically the solid waste management activities, which had included the assessment of the areas, cleaning campaigns, and a variety of other relevant activities. We had the beneficiaries of more than 700,000. And IOM worked with the Ministry of Health and the respective municipalities to identify these areas which had been in urgent need for waste management and waste collection activities. So we confirmed the urgency of this, and we had conducted the activities in one community, actually, through the whole 5 months. The campaign is comprised of over than 30,000 health promotion of house-to-house visit, distributing more than 18,000 information materials to those displaced persons, and there were like 2,000 hygiene kits that had been distributed in two camps, Kelma Camp and Suraif Camp, two of the most effective camps in South Darfur.
What type of training was conducted to promote hygiene?
100 persons from these two camps had been actually trained in how to conduct the hygiene promotion of minimum standards among their community of the internally displaced persons. More than 70 waste collecting pins had been installed and we rehabilitated two tractors, one truck. We provide some equipment like garbage bags and wheelbarrows to the communities there to help them with the, like, daily activities that they do.
What has been the response of the displaced people who received materials and also the response of the training?
They were very pleased with this initiative, actually, especially women. We noticed that the women started actually cleaning in front of their shelter through the days of the campaign, helping us with our campaign. And most of those were very excited about the fact they are knowing more about their personal hygiene and the importance of cleanliness.
How long will this campaign go on?
It was a rapid response towards this activity, but with the background in our head that we want to have those people responding to their community. It was 5 to 6 months because we, WHO and UNICEF, IOM, WHO and UNICEF, had been doing this at the same time. WHO and UNICEF supported the delivery of life-saving water services through certain strategies like operating, maintaining, rehabilitating the damaged water facilities and the damaged latrines for those displaced persons. So it was like, we can say, 6 months.
Going forward, do you think people will continue to practice hygiene on their own?
Yes, we think that they are fully now have the basic awareness of this. But finally, this was part of a holistic approach that we also prepare with a lot of partners and communities for the potential of a scene like this, for the potential of upcoming heavy rains and flash floods that usually start within this month, actually, July and August. IOM continues to participate in preparedness response with our partners to reduce the impact of floods. The last year is 2013, and this year also we are preparing for this kind of activity.
That's Dr. Aziza El-Maki. She's the emergency health specialist for IOM, speaking earlier today with VOA's Kim Lewis from Khartoum. Here's a look at some of today's news headlines. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has held separate talks with rival Afghan presidential candidates and outgoing President Hamid Karzai in Kabul to try to seek a resolution to a bitter election dispute. Allegations of widespread fraud in last month's runoff vote have provoked presidential hopeful Abdullah Abdullah to reject preliminary results that put rival candidate Ashraf Ghani in the lead. Abdullah has declared himself the rightful winner, and his supporters have been urging him to establish his own government. The election controversy has worried Afghanistan's U.S.-led international backers as it threatens to revive deeply rooted ethnic Afghan rivalries and undermine a decade-long U.S.-led international effort to politically and economically stabilize the country. Israel has carried out more attacks on the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip in the fourth day of a major offensive. Palestinians say at least 100 people have been killed, including many civilians. There have been no Israeli fatalities in cross-border rocket attacks. Israeli warplanes launched dozens of airstrikes on Gaza yesterday, raising the total in the four-day offensive to more than 1,000. The military said it hit targets belonging to the ruling Islamic militant group Hamas, including long-range rocket launchers, government facilities, smuggling tunnels, and training camps. It has also hit many homes of Hamas commanders, causing high civilian casualties among Palestinians. And finally, Human Rights Watch has condemned a recent Ugandan court ruling against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender activists, whose workshop on rights advocacy was broken up 2 years ago by the government. In February of 2012, Uganda's Minister for Ethics and Integrity, Simon Lokoto, stormed into a human rights workshop run by gay and lesbian activists in Entebbe and shut it down. The organizers sued Lokoto, arguing that the workshop was intended to develop advocacy and leadership skills. But on Wednesday, Uganda's High Court ruled against the activists, saying Lokoto had acted in the public interest by protecting Ugandan moral standards. And that's a look at today's top stories, and that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Get Up by South Sudanese rap sensation Emmanuel Jal.
Yeah. Say all walk and no play makes me a dull boy, but you know what I say, I gotta get up. Sometimes I feel like my life just ain't mine. I'm living out of my suitcase from one place to another place. Hey, I get a chance sometimes to I make a few dollars sometimes to I'm thinking I deserve a night in the town, having fun with my friends around. Hey, I gotta get up. People I meet, even if your heart made of concrete. I know a girl named Tina, nicknamed Katina. Never walked in a lab, but she rolling in a Beamer. Brand new Beamer with a brand new hat, brand new bag and her shoes to match.
That's South Sudanese artist Emmanuel Jal and his song Get Up. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad